So I thought this was actually a video about haircuts for men.
Oh, I love haircuts for men.
I wasn't sure if you had heard of them, but they seem like the kind of thing you would like.
No, I was the exact same way. One day YouTube was just like, you like haircuts for men, which I think is how everything goes nowadays. Yeah, hold on, which one's this? Haircuts for men fucking slaps.
Do they just have a different, like, language for their albums? Because the other one was Japanese.
Oh, shit.
That's weird.
Yeah, that's what I noticed, because I have never seen a Cyrillic Haircuts for Men release. They're pretty sick, though. I used to listen to them, like, a lot when I would, like, play League and stuff, just because it's really great, like,
I love fake Cyrillic
music. Fake Cyrillic, yeah.
Yeah, when people, like, put Donald Trump in Cyrillic, but not, like, know what the letters are.
Yeah, I find it kind of tacky when they do, like, a lot of, you know, like, movies and video games and shit do that, where they'll use, like the Cyrillic, like, Yah letter, which is the backwards R for an R. And I'm like, guys, come on, it's a fucking language. It's not a graphic design, yeah.
They think it's, like, French. Or, like, Spanish with some of the, like, question marks are upside down or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think the thing they showed Haircuts to Men was because I was listening to, like, those weird Japanese city pop things.
Yeah.
That I think killed off those poor kids studying to lo-fi hip-hop beats.
I think in a lot of ways it is, like, a bit of a natural continuation. I don't know what it is, because obviously the lo-fi beats, the beats themselves are not anime-inspired, but there is a lot of, like, anime overtones, so I think that just that, like, great interest in, like, you know, just Japanese culture just kind of got weird music YouTube going, and now here we are.
Well, City Pop was, but, like, all the videos for it have these looping animations from, like, 80s anime.
I know, I love those.
Like, City Hunter and stuff.
Yeah, those are, I have such a soft spot for those, I don't even know why, they just make you feel good, you know?
Yeah, it's funny, though, when the clip is from something really, like, fucked up. Just an anime you should not, like, back search, but there was one scene in it where two people ride in a car and it looks cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, Akira.
Yeah.
For some things, I'm just like, wow, it's real feel good, you know, one cool.
Genocyber.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else?
Playtime's over, Star Fox.
I guess so. So, I'm going, and I think I did this to you before, but didn't actually do it on the show. I just sort of said it to you. I'm going to content warning this book. Now, for context, I have not content warninged, I think, anything else in this show. Which includes, like, a guy having sex with a corpse.
Yeah, I didn't expect you to start now, Jackson, so this must be...
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so, speaking of start now, the second chapter of this book, which I think is about his page-turning ASMR, the second chapter of his book, titled Patty, which is the name of, like, his first wife, guess how it starts?
Is it in media res?
No.
All right. Is it? Boy. Is it a flash forward?
So I had my complete the sentence.
I had my... Oh, God. Can I have a hint? Am I allowed to say it? Will I... What is it? Just tell me. I don't know.
My first sexual experience.
Oh, good.
Where he describes a face sitting.
Wow, as a first... Good for him.
I think it was like a bully when he was a kid.
Okay. All right. So, I'm just going to listen now.
Get ready for this one.
I don't know whose face it was.
It's his. Yeah, just... Let's... This book... I have it sort of sectioned into, I think, four different kinds of topics that it gets into. The four things I'd describe it as. And the first one is, of course, with any music book, sex and drugs.
Naturally.
As mentioned, he opens it by describing his first sexual experience when he was, quote, 4 or 5. And it's incredibly fucked up.
I mean, I imagine.
Let's see.
I'd be a little worried if it wasn't, actually.
It made the idea of going to the bathroom something that was nasty, that you had to hide. But also, because of the locked door, it seemed to me that it was exciting. Really evil. I became attracted to bathrooms to see what went on in there. This is the part of his childhood he wanted to show to us. This was is an interview with him.
He volunteered this information.
What about my childhood do people need to know about? My bathroom fetish.
Yeah, bathrooms turned me on when I was like 5. There you go. Thanks for reading my book, everyone.
Oh, he was also into comic book girls. Like girls in comic books. Let's see, Blondie, Dagwood, Terry and the Pirates.
Oh, wow. What year was this about, like, at this when this person was getting turned on by the bathrooms?
I want to say the 40s. Yeah, 1930 to 1944.
Okay.
That's when this is taking place. So, like, the 30s. This is what goes on in 30s high schools. And then the... So the entire book is just, like, an endless cavalcade of his, like, incredibly creepy sexual situations. We're not even going to get into the worst ones yet.
Oh, come on. but you will say the worst one, right?
I mean, that's a matter of opinion, but probably. I mean,
but,
you could...
yes.
It's kind of like Dennis Reynolds in Erotic Life, but not a lie.
Is it? How comparable is it to the Chudat Chronicles?
To the Chudat Chronicles?
Yes, the Chudat Chronicles. Like, Chew.
Like the Smash Brothers player?
Yeah, Chew kept a incredibly like open public diary.
What?
You should look it up. You should look it up after this. It's a good read, man. It's a
Chudat. All those people. He had the most insane life of any of those people. Like even compared to Mango. Mango never became beholden to another player's family somehow. And then the guy he was forced to play teams with later tried to like steal money from Mewtwo King. Got kicked out of the community plank style. So the other big one is the Mirror High situation. And this is when he really becomes addicted to heroin. Which is going to haunt him throughout the rest of the book.
More than bathrooms.
But what happens is he meets... see if he describes her. He describes her as pleasurably plump, a girl named Sheila who goes into the bathroom to do heroin and have sex. In it, Sheila He says, and this is from the book, "I felt this peace like a kind of warmth. I could feel it start in my stomach from the whole inside of my body. I felt the tranquility. It was so relaxing. It was so gorgeous." Sheila said, "Look at yourself. Look at yourself in the mirror. Look in the mirror." And that's what I'd always done. I'd stood and looked at myself in the mirror. I'd talk to myself and say how rotten I was. Look at yourself. Look at how beautiful you are. Look at your eyes. Look at your pupil. I looked in the mirror and I looked like an angel. I looked at my pupils and they were pinpoints. They were tiny, little dots. It was like looking into a whole universe of joy and happiness and contentment.
So yeah, heroin. I'm beginning to pick up on that.
So that's kind of like the rough introduction to this book. But I would describe it as, one, good. I sat down and read, like, all 600 pages
of it. It's got my attention.
Yeah, I mean, I read it because James Chance name-dropped it. Did you know that he liked our episode? Well, I don't know if he did. Somebody on, like, his social media team did.
Oh, no shit, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But it's interesting because it's a good book to read some of and then just put down for like a week, because it's insane throughout, but in such a way that it's like gets kind of mundane, like how a really busy week becomes kind of normal after a while.
Just desensitizes.
Yeah, but the moment you start thinking it's normal and like, oh, I don't really want to read it anymore, you go back a week later and just more insane shit happens.
Just when you think you're out, they pull you back in.
Yeah, everything in his, like, playing jazz on the road is just him describing how unfathomably successful he was and then also constantly ruining it with drugs and cheating on his wife on the road. At one point he like meets members of his fan club and has a sexual encounter even he regrets because one of them was a minor.
Wow, and he copped that.
Yeah, he openly admitted that was like the one thing he felt bad about, and he does some pretty horrifying stuff in this book.
It's like, what's the one thing that I really feel bad about? I should probably, like, you know, unsolicited just offer it. Yeah.
He is definitely like the number one, if you idolized him, you missed the point character.
One of those.
Truly a dark protagonist. Because he's just like constantly cheating on his wife. At one point he goes into a incredibly creepy extended like description of how he would hit on hotel maids. And like he made it seem like some of them were okay with it, but also that he could kind of tell a lot of them weren't, and
I mean also
neither one sounded okay.
it's his retelling of it.
Yeah, that's true as well. Which is something you have to give some credit to him for, because he doesn't make himself sound very good. Even in stuff like that, he's like, yeah, so, you know, I just kind of creeped up on hotel maids. What do? You know, you're on the road, you're bored.
Okay. What are you going to do? Yeah.
Damn. So this will surprise you. His first wife leaves him. He goes to jail.
Whack.
Yeah. And this is where he starts going on, like, racist tirades. He goes on a few in the book, usually in prison. Other than, like, complaining about... There was an incredibly...
Who does he go in on?
There's one strange one after, like, an epiphany he has where he starts complaining about Black Panthers.
Oh.
It's an incredibly weird group to, like, go against.
Yeah.
But then, other than saying, like, Black inmates play the victim more often than others, he saves most of his racism for Mexican inmates.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, it's incredibly weird, too. He has so many, like, it just makes him sound very petty. Like, he's just catty towards Mexican people. Truly.
Yeah, some hardcore prison material.
You really did. His stuff in... The descriptions from, like, book reviews that I saw was that his stuff about prison was horrifying, but also just so, like, passionate. When actually it just makes him sound absurdly, like, lame and kind of obnoxious and easily angered.
That is where I beg to differ.
So, where did you cut out? Where did I cut out, I should say?
Racist tirades in prison, pretty catty towards racial minorities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Funny. I've never really heard that type of description before.
Yeah, he's just, like, you know the way people on reality shows like to deconstruct the fights they get into?
Yeah.
He's kind of like that, but with, like, Mexican, like, gang members that he meets in prison.
The thing that I kind of thought is it's like, he is petty and catty in the way that only real-life shittiness could be, you know?
That's a really good way of describing what's kind of fascinating about this book, because it's... Imagine a person who has one of those people that just has a lot of weird stories about their life. They go off. Yeah, we knew a lot of them at school.
We do.
And we were occasionally them. Now imagine, like, just the most awful version of that person who is simultaneously the most talented person on Earth.
Oh my God. Yeah, it sounds like they would make great music.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah, that's basically this guy. And reading his book is just slingshotting between fairly mundane, boring, like, repetitive digressions about being on the road and just the most psychotic shit you run into. And page 177, he says, in order to, loosen his wig, Art would get silly and nutty and make weird noises. He'd, walk like a spastic, apologies if you're British, and, walk right by lined up inmates and kind of slobbering. He says he got a reputation as a nut.
I've never really... heard about that as like a prison tactic. I honestly haven't. Eccentric and weird that people don't want to mess with you.
Yeah, instead of trying to like punch the toughest guy, he just like starts drooling and shaking uncontrollably.
They're like, okay, yeah, what's going on with this dude?
Just starts acting like a kid in The Grudge. he also has he'll just introduce a person as his Chinaman friend Miyaki. Miyaki, mind you, does not sound like a Chinese name.
God.
Who's a safe cracker.
Sure, why not? Fuck it, yeah.
Because
we live in fantasy land.
One time in prison, somebody shouts to him, "You look familiar to me, man." And it turns out Art was recognized by a man named Matthew Beard, who played Stymie in the Little Rascals shorts. Matthew Beard would go on to change his first name to Stymie to better associate himself with the role. Just
Little Rascals just ever find you in prison.
That so is weird. Yeah, never a plotline that would come up in fiction.
Yeah, I wonder what the Little Rascal was in for. Hope it was something good.
I don't. He goes into a lot of different like aspects of prison and how it affects your reputation, though. Like, prisoners tend to have a hierarchy of how bad you were, and generally the people who did the worst things in their mind tend to get treated worse. Unless they're in, like, really? A group.
Yeah. I've heard stuff similar to, like, sex offenders.
Yeah.
Get, like, treated. You know.
Mm-hmm. Like in that documentary, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, where Batman intentionally brands people so they get murdered in prison.
The nonfiction film.
Yeah. There's a very important subplot about him fencing stolen goods. And... where, like, he resells shoplifted items, I think.
Alright, that's pretty tame, at least.
That's how he supports his drug habit, yeah, for a large part of the book.
Yeah, that's not unheard of.
And again, like, just the book's kind of chugging along until you get to a section where he describes meeting a woman at a lighthouse party and having sex with her.
A lighthouse party?
Yeah.
That sounds sick.
She lives especially in a lighthouse.
Oh my god.
just that comes by. Yeah, I met this girl at a lighthouse.
The lighthouse.
And then we hear her side of the story, and he's, surprisingly, sounds kind of like an asshole. Weird.
That's weird, yeah.
Oh, throughout really? The book, you get other people's opinions of him.
That's probably better than... You know, his half a lot of the times.
Some of it is. There is a true genius behind the way he just kind of like... Because he does have a talent for making himself sound worse than anybody else could.
I guess that is like a talent, yeah.
But I would say the most important part of this book, and the thing that kind of travels through it the furthest, is his relationship with his second wife, and I believe they did get married, Diane.
Oh, what a sweet lady, Diane.
This relationship...
This fucking relationship.
There are... few things... that have made me feel quite as sick as reading about this relationship.
Oh, do tell.
There are so many people, like, that make fun of the whole Sid and Nancy thing.
Oh, boy.
But I could understand why people thought that movie, at least, was romantic. There is no, like... toxic desire aspect of this. There's no forbidden romance aspect to this.
There's no redeeming qualities whatsoever.
These are just like a short film about love by Kieslowski was just like some guy who tried to date a girl out of his league and then killed himself.
Oh wow, what a timeless tale, man.
This guy, I mean this like Diane's storyline in this book is without a doubt the worst relationship I think I've ever read.
Ever depicted.
It is horrifying.
Can you summarize in a sentence why?
In a sentence? No.
Oh god. You have to though.
It's an epoch because well I just don't understand why they're ever together. It's not like they're passionate about each other. What it is at a certain point they realize they've alienated literally everyone else in their lives, and just the hatred between them is the only like connection they have with anybody after a certain point. Holy shit. And so they just stay together.
Fuck it, let's get married.
Well, the marriage was when things were relatively good, when they were just, you know, getting high together.
That does sound nice. That does sound good.
I believe what happened was, and this is very condensed, he started dating a chubby girl, his words, because he needed a place to live. But he lost interest in sleeping with her. So he moved in with two people who immediately got him hit with, like, drugs, which he was trying to avoid. So then he moves in with Diane, and she, like, busts his ass for a bit, but I think she just starts using drugs with him, too. Truly the worst example of codependency. We're not even sure why they're, like, codependent.
Oh, it's definitely...
It's just, like, they found the secret to, like, a Tesla coil of shitty relationships. There's nothing powering it, but it just keeps creating energy.
Yeah, it can't run out.
Let's see what I wrote here. Fighting constantly. Sometimes one tried to get the other to clean up, but they often exacerbated the other's drug problem. Diane would take off a few times, often stealing Art's money, instruments, and pants. There were multiple stories surrounding, their inclination of getting poodles. Which is truly, like, these people can't take care of themselves, and poodles are the hardest dog to take care of.
Yeah, that's also, like, a classic, like, having a kid will save our marriage. It's a band-aid. It's like, all right, we got a dog, we're legit.
Yeah, so there were a lot of... There's, like, an entire story in this book where Arch just, like... Yeah, so I just kind of started hanging out on my lawn while selling stolen goods, and, you know, Diane left me with the poodle who I didn't know how to clean, so it was just me sitting on my lawn in, like, Hollywood with a dirty poodle.
It's our hero, the protagonist, our protagonist.
Watching people with actual jobs leave for work in the morning.
Those suckers.
Now, it is important to remember, Diane is also terrible.
Well, who's more terrible? Are they equal? Is he more terrible than her?
I think Art hits the pinnacle, but she does the really shitty thing first. Like, the thing that's, like, super villain shitty, as opposed to just relationship shitty.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. So, when he's in jail, she starts trying to contact him again. And she, like, promises that she'll help him, like, get in contact with his dad before Christmas and stuff. And he finds out that she lied. And I think his dad dies while he's in jail or something.
Great.
And that not only did she lie, she was also cheating on him throughout visiting him in prison. And he hears it from other inmates.
How the fuck is that even possible? The fuck? Other inmates?
Yeah, I think either they... I think it was just, like, guys that they knew. Again, yeah. In this weird prison system, everyone seems... It's like a high school. Everyone just seems to know each other.
Yeah, just to have shit on each other lying around.
Yeah. This then results in Art, like, intentionally trying to get back at her. So when she goes to jail, he then, like, says, oh no, I've forgotten all of that, don't worry about it. He tells her how much he's forgiven her, and in the entire monologue he's like, oh, this is what I'm about to get, you know, get my revenge. Once he gets her into a conjugal visit, he proceeds to attack her and just sort of, like, beat and scream at her.
Yeah, just fuck her up. Yeah, I see.
And then he gets her into an actual, like, living situation. Where anytime that she, like... He just intentionally Stockholm syndromes her. to the point where if she's ever down, he does everything he can to make her feel good, just so he can go back to treating her like shit to get back at her.
Oh my god. Yeah, I can.
The worst thing I've read. It's such a, like, personal and...
That's sadistic.
Planned sadistic treatment of, again, his wife.
Yeah.
At a certain point, she goes back to jail, I think. It's kind of hard to figure out when they're in or out of jail in this book. Because they're just going in and out constantly. Yeah. Like, every character. And then... she, like, sort of starts propping herself up as, like, the jazz man's wife. Because Art Pepper is, like, a famous musician. He had, like, had a breakout record by this point. Like, one of the big albums of the 50s. And we'll get to that later. But, so she kind of, like, becomes a jazz man's wife. And he, you know, reignites it. He's like, oh, no, we're, you know, I've forgiven all of that. Don't worry about it. This was after the first time he attacked her. And then they move in together when she gets out, because of course, she does.
I don't understand these people.
And now it's, imagine reading it for like 300 pages of just this, just this awful relationship.
And then things got worse.
You somehow hate and feel bad for everyone except Art, cause he is kind of terrible. Well, even Art, like, this shit with his dad was unacceptable.
What does his dad do?
Well, his dad, it's not what his dad did, it's that she, dragged him along, saying she was helping him keep contact with his dad.
Yeah, just manipulating him, using his dad. Yeah. I just assume that this person had, like, a variety of horrific, like, you know, a terrible upbringing.
Well, I do know that one girl used to bully him by sitting on his face. That seemed to really affect him.
Yeah, that seems to everything set the tone, really.
I should probably make this clear to you. I'll cut it out, because it truly is disgusting. He goes into a creepy amount of detail about that girl.
God damn, man. Is that even legal, really?
I don't. In a book, probably.
Yeah.
But breaking out, the C word for when he was a kid was truly impressive.
But God.
Like, I cannot read that section out loud. You would sound...
Oh, yeah?
Like, yeah.
Can you not do it because you can or because you don't want to, Jackson?
I...
Okay, don't. No, don't.
I cannot.
Okay.
I've described people masturbating with vacuums on stage. I cannot describe what he says in this book. Oh yeah, he does use the N-word a couple times, I think.
Oh, of course. Because
of course he does.
Yeah. I was getting worried, actually. I wonder if this guy...
He uses it less than you think he would, but that's not much of a credit to his character. But yeah, so they move in together out of jail, and he starts sleeping with another girl and making sure she knows about it, because at this point she has somehow fallen back into a terrible love with him. Again, they seem to still hate each other, though. It's very hard to follow. It is one of the most... It's a tragic romance in the truest sense, in that they should never have ever spoken to each other and don't like each other at all.
Nice.
But Art at one point just says, yeah, so, like, my daughter's never spoken to me. I think my parents are dead. I don't really know anyone else, so I guess it's just me and Diane now.
I mean, yeah, it's like you said before, it's codependency. There's a lot of classic, like, you know, abuser.
Is literally no one else in their lives at this point.
Because that is the abuser playbook, is to limit, you know, someone's contact with their network or other, any, like, to have their own friends. But these people
did it to each other.
Doing it to themselves and each other simultaneously, yeah.
So they just, like, eclipsed everyone but the other person that they hate most of all, so they're stuck with that person.
Yeah, it's...
And it's truly something to read. I mean, it's one of the most fascinating relationships I've ever had to read about, but it's hard to get through. At a certain point, she does finally move in with her family, and it seems that both of her kids hate her, and then she contracts, like, a terminal illness and dies young.
Well, and that's that. That's the story of...
Yeah.
Diane.
It wasn't a slow death. It didn't burn fast. They were just two codependent drug users that clearly hated each other, and yet were so out of anyone else's lives, that a lot of the points the two had little going on beyond either... Wait. The point is they had nothing else in their lives except hating each other. That was the only thing.
That happens all the time. Yeah. Every day.
Okay, so... This is sort of the important part of this book. This is why you'd read a book about Art Pepper. So that time she stole his pants, right?
Yeah.
So that was followed by one where she wakes him up, because she had gone back to him. She wakes him up and tells him that he has a recording to go make. He had no idea what she was talking about, but apparently he had scheduled a recording with music legend and personal friend, record producer Les Koenig, who was like the big jazz producer of the 50s. Art had not touched his saxophone in a period of time that he's unsure about. Estimations range from under a week to about 6 months without playing his saxophone. Probably months without, like, seriously practicing.
Yeah, being in tip-top shape.
Art's own comparison is like a professional basketball player trying to play off the bench after not, like, practicing even dribbling for 6 months. And when doing a jazz album, you can't just play, like, sheet music in front of you. You have to improvise solos.
Mm-hmm. You have to be pretty on top of your game, yeah.
And what's more, this was Art's album. He was the lead player, not backup. And the people he was going to play with were pretty big musicians themselves, Paul Chambers and Red Garland. Red Garland sounds like a Final Fantasy character. I do love 50s names. It's just the dumbest names on Earth.
They have a certain flair.
Oh, I'm Terry Crenshaw. So, as I'm sure you've guessed, this album was cranked out easily and is considered, like, an all-time 5 out of 5 album.
Oh my god, yes, I love it. Of course.
Many of the reviewers in the book specifically point to how cohesive and practiced the group sounded. This album, Art Pepper Meets the Rhythm Section, is considered a defining jazz album of that decade. And this was the 1950s.
Yeah. And again, it's of course, it has to be that way. Like, it was made so... Only in real life is made so haphazardly,
you know,
under such sketchy circumstances.
You know Amadeus?
I do.
I've never... I feel that way about this asshole. This dude...
This brilliant bastard.
He does nothing but, like, get high and emotionally torment his wife and go, like, in and out of jail, and then he records this album.
Yeah, then he, like, changes the face of, like, a genre.
Yeah. This is what he had to say about it. Quote, "I had to do the impossible. No one could have done it at all unless it was someone as steeped in the genius role as I was, as I am... was and am and will be and will always be and have always been born, bred, and raised in nothing but a total genius." Ah ha 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 ha. He includes the laughter. But that was at least at the height of his career, when he was still a regular at shows, on the road, recorded with decent consistency. By 1971, Art had been missing that relative stability for almost a decade and was nearly going to die because of his drug habits.
Things to happen.
It was made clear to him by a doctor, that if he did not quit drugs, heroin, I think it was still heroin at this point, he would not be alive for much longer. So, you can probably guess what happens next.
I think I have an idea.
Yeah, he gets clean and then proceeds to mount a legendary comeback, knocks out 3 to 4 incredibly well-regarded albums one after the other, has a world tour. Just, what the fuck are you supposed to do with this? This guy, he couldn't throw his life away if he tried, and he did.
Try he did.
He tried so hard to ruin his life, and I was like, I guess I'll become a jazz, like, legend again.
Yeah, you know, like, it's that's his settling, like, retiring. You know, like, most of us would, like, you know, stop being a musician or stop being, like, brilliant.
Yeah.
But is his, like, his full-time gig was, I don't know, making a mockery of life and death as a whole.
Yeah.
Some shit like that. And he's like, okay, I'm going to retire from that and just, like, go on a world tour.
Yeah. Just gets out, like, 3 to 4 albums. He hadn't recorded in years. Was probably going to die, like, a month before. Like, he was on... To go back to his basketball analogy, it was like if Jordan becoming a Washington Wizard resulted in 2 more championships. Just, what do you even do with this?
Yeah, right. It's like, well, does any of this make sense? Is this all like, obviously, is this all a game? You know, poetry
swords.
But it's like, does any of this shit matter, really?
And then he straight up laughs in your face about it, to the point where that had to be included in the book. So that's the 4 aspects that make this book truly something else. The obvious one, sex and drugs, the insane story structure, the Diane situation, and the fact that he is always going to be better than you, no matter how strung out he is.
Yeah, no matter how hard he tries.
No matter how hard he tries to, like, throw his life away. Let's see. Yeah, I can't even get to the Christine stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think she may have been the person in the lighthouse.
Oh, that's
to give you an idea, it was very hard to figure out what stuff I should, like, go into.
Yeah, I could imagine.
There's a lot of just insane crap that happens in this book. Turn over Pepper.
I mean, like, from what I heard, from what little that I heard, it sounded to me like some kind of, you know, like, I don't know, anime.
Mm-hmm.
Just not in the realm of, you know, reality.
Where is it? Okay, here it is. I'm just going to read this whole part from the book, because it kind of sums up the fact that he's just inhumanly good at stuff.
Can stand alone. Okay.
Yeah. I said, "What do you want to play?" Sonny says. "Let's play Cherokee. That's a song jazz musicians used to play. The bridge, which is the middle part, has all kinds of chord changes in it. It's very difficult. If you can play that, if some kid came around and he wanted to play, you'd say, 'Let's play Cherokee,' and you'd count it off real fast." I said, "Well, beat it off." He went 1, 2, 1, 2. He was flying. We played the head, the melody, and then he took the first solo. He played, I don't know how, about 40 choruses. He played for an hour, maybe. Did everything that he could, that could be done on a saxophone. Everything you could play. As much as Charlie Parker could have played if he'd been there. Then he stopped. And he looked at me. He gave me one of those looks. "All right, sucker, it's your turn." And it's my job. It's my gig. I was strung out, I was hooked, I was drunk, I was having a hassle with my wife, Diane, who threatened to kill herself in a hotel room next door. I had marks on my arm. I thought there were narcs in the club, and all of a sudden I realized it was me. He'd done all those things, and now I had to put up or shut up, or get off, forget it, or quit, or kill myself, or do something. I forgot everything, and everything came out. I played way over my head. I played completely different than he did. I searched and found my own way, and what I said reached the people. I played myself. I knew I was right, and the people loved it, and they felt it. I blew and blew, and when I finally finished, I was shaking all over. My heart was pounding. I was soaked in sweat, and the people were screaming. The people were clapping. I looked at Sonny, but I just kind of nodded, and he went, "All right." And that was it. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's some... when you put it that way, he's lived a lot of life.
Yeah.
I can certainly say that.
Yeah, he's been in jail more times than I've like left the state. I don't know how impressive this sounds like out of context for the time, but you might as well listen to it since we're here.
Sure. I like the stereo mix. That sounds really cool. The trumpet. Is that him on the trumpet? It's super difficult for like me to judge.
It's a jazz album if.
Yeah.
But as a jazz album, it's generally considered to be just one of those kind of workhorse perfect records, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can imagine. Definitely. I mean, like, there's records, you know, like contemporary music, like hip-hop and stuff, or like, you know, To Pimp a Butterfly, where it's like, to a non-hip-hop listener, it's like, yeah, this is hip-hop, but if you're...
Freddie Gibbs' Pinata might be a good example of that.
Yeah, I'd say so. It's like a non-listener would listen to it and be like, this is good. And then if obviously you are really logged into like hip-hop music, you know, you have like a lot more context.
It's also crazy to think that guy had this life. Because it is pretty just like nice music.
I know, that's another thing. I think that's the thing that I find most difficult to reconcile, you know, because obviously, you know, I hear about, like, Ozzy and shit. It's like, oh, that's one thing, because they make it's crazy, the devil music.
Like, yeah, they make music with a bunch of pentagrams on it. One of the songs is called Crazy Train, where he just talks about his drug habits.
Yeah, talks about crazy trains. It's crazy. It's insane. Meanwhile, in the 50s and jazz,
and yet their lives
were like heroin.
Yeah, Charlie Parker, who I think was Miles Davis's like mentor, he was so fucked up when he died. The cops didn't recognize his body because his face was too like mangled and bloated.
Yeah, from what I understand, I don't have a comprehensive understanding of, like, the jazz community back then. But, yeah, I understand that, like, drugs were just out of control, like, amongst jazz musicians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is, like, weird for someone like me, because... You know, obviously, if you get into, like, rock music at a young age, again, that's where you get, like, introduced to, like, shit like Ozzy, like, the Stones. That's part of their whole, you know, brand.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, it's like you listen to jazz music. And it's just, like, I find it crazy that I don't know. Maybe what it is it's just like amongst like creative people, you know, just like some things don't change. I should start listening to more jazz.
So the guy who the producer on this, Les Connick, he made a lot of the big albums of this era. Let me see if they've got. They don't have a list, but what happened later was he refused to cooperate with the House on Un-American Activities Committee, and they ruined his career.
Yes,
it all comes back, baby.
It all comes back to our boy McCarthy. Oh, the goddamn commies! Take that!
They're
owning the libs.
Oh my god!
Stopping jazz from being made.
It's truly amazing how just everyone throws around the word blacklist now, because they people are like mad at them online.
Yeah, bang blacklist, bang blacklist,
and just any like famous person you can play 6 Degrees of Ruined by McCarthy with. It's like, oh, by the way, that nice album you listened to, yeah, his career was ended instantly.
It's like, oh yeah, is there any freaking proof? No, the proof was that someone thought it.
Well, the proof was that he didn't rat anyone out.
Yeah,
they didn't suspect him of anything. He just refused to tell on other people.
Innocence is, I don't know, it's some 40K shit. It's like, innocent is not innocent enough. Innocence is no excuse.